You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Ali Moreno, Shaka Hislop and Stevie Nicol. We'll kick things off with an emotional interview that Richarlison gave ESPN Brazil, talking about his mental health after the World Cup. He spoke in Portuguese. Ali provides the translation.
Before I go to training, I wanted to go home. I wanted to go back to my room. I didn't know what was going through my head. I even told my dad that I was going to give up. What I went through after the World Cup, I discovered things at home from people who had lived with me for over 7 years. It's crazy. And to go to my father, who was the guy who chased my dream with me, and say, Dad, I want to give up. It's crazy. I just played in a World Cup, man, at my peak. And I was reaching my limit, you know? I was in depression there. I don't know. I wanted to give up. I don't know. I was suffering a lot of attacks after the World Cup, and along with the personal problem at home, it affected me a lot. Even I, that seemed to be mentally strong, you know, after the World Cup, it seemed like it all fell apart. I think the therapist, like it or not, saved my life. I used to have this prejudice. I thought it was weak. I thought I was crazy. In my own family, there are people who think that anyone who goes to a psychologist is crazy. They think they're insane. But I discovered it and thought it was wonderful. The best discovery I've ever had in my life.
A raw and emotional interview there from Richarlison, very much championing those struggling with mental health to go and seek help. As we welcome in Jürgen Klinsmann. Jürgen, what, from a coach's point of view, when someone's injured, obviously it's all about, are you fit, are you ready to go? When it comes to mental health, how difficult is that to deal with when you're trying to get your team going, you're trying to get the best team out there, when you've got players who are clearly struggling?
Well, it's probably the biggest challenge for all managers, coaches out there, is to understand in which mental conditions the players are day in, day out. And you deal with, on the top level, with 25, 26 highly paid professionals, and all of them are different. All of them are very, very different. So I can absolutely feel for Richarlison what he went through, especially after the World Cup. I was there myself. I saw them play. I saw his beautiful goal, first of all, and then I saw him go out against Croatia in a drama game. And this hits you very, very hard. I went through an experience like that in the 94 World Cup in the US. We lost in the quarterfinals to Bulgaria, and I was destroyed for months, because at that point I had 5 goals. I thought maybe I got to win this thing also as top scorer. So this is very, very important nowadays, you know, to understand their mental condition, to understand what's going on in their private lives, to understand what's going on in their public lives. The generation of today, it's really nothing to be jealous of, because they go through a lot of emotional issues day in, day out. Now with social media, obviously the whole world judges you. The environment changed. It's a lot different to what we experienced maybe 20, 30 years ago. When I took over Germany in 2004, I introduced a sports psychologist to the team, and they called me crazy in Germany because it was not their way of solving things. Well, that sports psychologist is still today with the Federation, thanks God, because they can read things better than we do. You know, we go basically our school is from a manager point of view is the game. You know, we study the game day in, day out. We try to figure things out between people and try to manage people. Obviously, the words, you know, man management, as Stevie often says, you know, is very, very, very important nowadays. But you cannot see it all as a manager. You cannot see what goes on behind the doors with your players day in, day out. You know, maybe something personal happens in the background, something in the family, something that we don't even know. And therefore, definitely, I support every step from Richarlison to seek help, you know, to talk to professionals, to open up, which he did. Thankfully, he did. And I would encourage every player, every athlete, to do so, because, you know, they're human beings just like everybody else, and you have problems and you have to solve those problems. And often these players are left alone because obviously we think, you know, they're machines. They can go day in, day out. They can play every 3-4 days, and it's not the truth. The truth is they are vulnerable. You know, they're fragile, and you have to read that hopefully ahead of time. In his case, hopefully he goes and asks for some help, some support. Therefore, this is a very important topic, and it's in all sports that way. If it is in basketball, American football, baseball, any sports, especially individual sports, it's more and more important that we can understand their mental state of mind.
Jürgen, it's interesting. You mentioned 1994 there. Just going into a little more detail, if you don't mind about it, it must be such a strange sensation in that you've fulfilled your goal, you've gone to the World Cup, you've scored goals, the game that you love, the game you've grown up wanting to play, and then all of a sudden it's associated not necessarily to all positive things.
Yeah, you go through these extremes, you know, extremes, highs in terms of you think you are in that tournament. I scored 5 goals until the quarterfinal. I thought, you know, I have a good chance. You know, the top was then 6 goals. But also we had actually with Germany in that World Cup an extremely, really good team. You know, we had the addition of the East German players joined us after the reunification. And we were overconfident. We were in a certain way. We were too arrogant then to win the tournament. But we had, quality-wise, probably the better team than 1990 when we won the World Cup. And then when you get that shock, you get sent home by another nation, and they just gave you a better game. Then it's really difficult for you to comprehend. And you go fly back, you know, to Germany or wherever, maybe on vacation, and you try to understand what did really happen. And it goes deep. It goes deep in you. And so what Richarlison felt, and I watched every Brazil game in Qatar. They did until that defeat against Croatia. For me, Brazil was the best team in Qatar because they were a step ahead of Argentina in that moment. We're talking about, you know, the quarterfinals then, and France. And so everyone feels then pain differently. Obviously, we're all different. And some players then, you know, they go too deep then in their frustration, in their, they get into a depressive mode, and you gotta read that, you gotta understand that. But, you know, as a national team manager, then also it's not, you're not living with them day in, day out. So their family needs to be there, their friends need to be there. They need to understand what's really happening now with such exceptional athletes. But at the end of the day, they're just very, very normal people, simple people. And they need help. And I'm really, really happy that he asked for help and he got the help and he pulled himself out of this dark moment and is back in very, very good shape and plays wonderful football again.
It must be a strange sensation because you want to play, obviously. You know, you want to put it out there, you want to be as part of your team. Yep. But you know in the back of the head, like, you're not where you should be. You spoke about this in your book.
Yeah.
Like, with when Hillsborough happened,
yeah,
something you kind of put deep, deep down, but you realised you weren't quite the same player that you wanted to be.
And the good thing about today, not only Richarlison coming out and others before him talking about this sort of thing, is that every club has a sports psychologist. And it's almost, or it should be almost for a coach, like going to the physio and asking about somebody's injury. You as a coach should be going to the psychologist and saying, right, where is Richarlison or any of your players? Is he in a position where he can play? Is he in a position where playing him is going to help him? Or does he have to just have a week off?
Right.
I mean, that's what you should be doing as a coach. I really think right now it's similar to any other any other of your staff that you would go to try and fix a situation. Unfortunately, now, that option's there for players. I 100% can tell you that we should, after Hillsborough, have been given the option of having counselling. But A, nobody brought it up. And B, more importantly, there's not a player then in that at that stage would have had the courage that Richarlison's just shown to tell somebody and sit in front of somebody with tears in your eyes, explaining how you feel and how you want to get better. That option wasn't there. So I think we're lucky that for people like Richarlison right now, that option's there. Unfortunately, they're taking advantage of it, because all it's going to do is help them.
Jürgen mentioned it, and it's interesting because obviously you look at finances. Oh, players are getting paid more than they ever have. Is there an argument to say they're under more pressure than they have been because of social media, because the spotlight is always on?
Absolutely, and I think social media adds a different, adds another layer to it, but that pressure's always been there. And to be honest, pressure is a part of the game, and we almost wear that as some kind of a badge on our sleeves because of how we've dealt with it over the years. And to get to this level of the game, you have to be able to deal with pressure. You've dealt with it all your life, albeit in different ways. As a young player coming through, it's that margin between success and failure. Am I good enough? Am I not? You get yourself through that. And while we've all had these kind of ups and downs in terms of our own mental health and dealing with the pressures of the game, more times than not, we get through it. So the belief is, just give it a little bit of time and I'll get through it. But as you get to the levels, particularly, you heard Jürgen speak about it, Richarlison speak about it, when you're at a tournament like the World Cup, and it's not just about your own successes and failures, but you're carrying the expectation of a nation on your back, of all the people that you love, all the people who've contributed to your career, all of a sudden, their own mental health, you feel you're carrying. And any kind of failure is just compounded by it. And it's oftentimes too much for one person to bear. And while some can grin and work their way through it, others, it takes a more damning effect. And credit to Richarlison, again, I agree with Stevie fully here. It's important that players who are going through these moments call attention to it, to let young players, let others in the game, at whatever level it may be, know that they aren't alone, that their situation is not unique, that they have to come out and seek help. At the same time, again, credit to the game for making sports psychologists or psychiatrists a part of the setup. Because in the past, that was a coach's job. And a coach is not trained to do that, not trained to diagnose or speak to players about it. Secondly, a coach has to pick who his best team is to go out and win a game, because that's where his mental health, that's where his successes are hinged. But the last thing that Richarlison or anybody in his position needed at that moment is to be left out.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, as a coach, here you are not trained to deal with it. You are trained to put out the best team on the park, and all of a sudden it just adds to the issues. So again, it's good that the game is moving in this direction. It's long overdue, and hopefully young players can take some heart from the direction and the bravery shown by Richarlison and others.
You were talking about pressure, Shaq, and what people may not realize, because they may just say, well, hold on a second. This is the sort of pressure that you have to deal with if you're going to play for Brazil or you're going to play at an elite level. You just look at it from the perspective that from a lot of these players, where they come from, their real pressure has been putting food on the table for their families. That the fact that they made it to this point, there is a whole line, long line of people in their family that depend on their success. And so when we talk about pressure and measure pressure, let's think about it this rationally from the perspective of a guy like Richarlison or whoever it may be. Look, my real pressure is putting food on the table for my family, and I've been able to do that. So I've handled that. I know what pressure is like. I know what it feels like. That's pressure. That's pressure, not knowing where your next meal is going to come from, and we're out of that. So it's not so much about the pressure itself. It's about dealing with the disappointment of what were the expectations, your own expectations, the expectations of a country, the expectations of everybody around you, of those long line of people that depend on you, not being able to deliver on those expectations. And that is the, it's the thing we all play to win. What fueled us was the competition and to win. And when you don't do that, it hits you, and it hits you hard. And to the point that these guys were making and that Jurgen was making, that now this is available in the game, what's also important is that it's no longer taboo to talk about it, and that it's becoming more normal to talk about it. That it's actually, I cannot imagine, and I don't go nearly as far back as Stevie or Saka, but I cannot imagine a locker room, even in my time, getting up and actually talking about the fact that you have mental health issues. It was taboo. It was a sign of weakness. It was a sign of a guy that you cannot trust. And the guy who actually spoke up and would say, I have issues with mental health, you don't trust that guy anymore in the locker room. Right. You turn your back from that guy. It's like, nope, this is not a guy that we can carry into the game because we don't know how he's going to react. The fact that players like Richarlison are talking about this makes that tag of being taboo kind of go away and normalizes the conversation. And I think it's important, like critically important, a point that it's already been made. The presence of a sports psychologist whose profession is to deal with your mental health, which was not the case for us. That was not the case. The first time that I ran into a sports psychologist in a soccer environment was with the national team. And even that was a little bit like, when I would go and talk to them, because you have to talk to a sports psychologist, they make appointments. I was guarded about it. I don't know that I trusted the situation and the process itself. So the more normal it becomes, more players are going to be more trusting of the process of the person that they're talking to, opening up, putting their emotions out there so that then they can now go and perform on the field, which in the end, it's what truly matters to most people, that you go and perform. And how do you go and perform? When you free yourself of this pressure.
Thank you very much, guys. A lot more reaction to this interview is over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go over to ESPN AFC to listen in more detail.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Big game this weekend, of course, in the Premier League as Manchester City take on Arsenal on Sunday. And it's not been a good international break for Pep Guardiola's side. John Stones, Kyle Walker, both injured in the internationals for England. Meanwhile, Kandji with a knock, Nunez with a knock as well. Meanwhile, we talked about yesterday, Andy Robertson going off for Liverpool. Gareth Southgate in the post-match press conference was asked in particular about John Stones.
On John Stones, What was the injury itself? How is he? And whether beforehand it was at all a risk playing him in the two matches?
Well, no. The first game, we measure everything, and the first game for him wasn't a game that was a high level in terms of the intensity. We've done exactly what Holland did with Virgil van Dijk tonight, what Norway did with Erling Haaland and Odegaard, starting them again. Holland also started Aki again, so it only ever seems to fall on us when there's a question around that. Of course, we're disappointed if he's got a problem. It seems to be in the sort of adductor area, so yeah, we'll just have to see. I mean, John also came in on the back of not having played for 2 weeks, so it's not that it's an overload situation, but I hate sending players back to their clubs if they're not fully fit, of course.
Jürgen, I want to start with you on this. What's the point? If you're Gareth Southgate, why play John Stones? Why risk him at all? Because you already know what you're going to get from him, don't you? So obviously, with a big game coming up this weekend, how much of an international manager are you bothered by it? Or are you thinking, look, I've only got 4 matches between the start of the Euros. I'm going to play my best team because I just want to see how they all gel together.
Well, simple. I think, you know, in a simple way, you trust your players. When they come to the national team, you trust them. They are ready to play and to perform for you. If they don't feel fit, if they have physical problems, you know, if they feel something, then they have to speak up. And I tell that to players all the time. You know, if there's an issue, then speak up and we solve the issue. But now what we talked about with psychologists before, you know, is now the same on the physical side of things. It's not Gareth, you know, being put in a corner now to explain what injuries the players have. You know, then ask a doctor, you know, was it right for the player to come? I think, you know, every national team manager right now in March, meaning 3 months prior to the European Championship, needs to try out certain things to find the right balance for his team. He needs every single minute on the field to realize which players match best the other players and so forth. So these two friendlies basically were crucial for Gareth Southgate to try things out and to see. It's not only about the individual performance of the player himself. It's about how things match up. You know, if we had that same discussion a week ago, you would have said, well, Germany is completely off right now. You know, we're not counting them to the favorites of the Euro. They look really, really shaky. Now they had two fantastic performances against France and against Holland. And they found a balance in their team. They found a balance bringing Toni Kroos back. They found a balance up front with Havertz, Wirtz and Musiala. They found a center-back pairing that fits now. And they found two new players in their team, a left back and a defensive midfielder that were not there before. If that wasn't for these two games in the last couple of days, they might be still lost in their whole approach towards the Euros. But now they're looking much, much better. So I think the discussion to say, you know, players should not go, you know, to the national teams because, you know, it's such an important period of the time for the club teams, which it is, you know. March, April, May, that's crunch time. There's no doubt about it, especially Champions League teams like Man City. Totally understand that. But if a player has any type of issues, he needs to come out and say, hey, you know, and for me, maybe it's better to rest, but it should not be the coach that has to basically dig into every single player's physical and mental state before he then tries to put together the right 11 for his team.
But why would the clubs themselves not be in touch with the staff of the international teams? There's no excuse for it anymore.
Right.
I mean, every club has got 75 physios. Surely you can get one of them and say, right, your job is to keep in touch with the physio of the international team of this country. Your job is that country. Your job is... Let them know what position John Stones is in or whoever it may be. If two games is going to be too much... Can we ask for some leniency if that's possible? These international managers, 2 months before a huge competition, should not be having to think about, I can only give him 100 or I wonder if he's going to be OK, unless somebody has specifically been in touch with them and said, look, I don't mind so-and-so coming, but he's not. I don't think he's 100%, so I would rather you didn't play him both games. How difficult is that?
Jürgen, how much interaction did you have with domestic managers when coach?
I mean, yeah, Steve is absolutely right. No, there's constant communication between the club teams and the national team managers or the staff. Absolutely, that is the case. And the players, I mean, take now John Stones as an example. He wants to badly go and play for England. He wants to be in the starting 11 in this European Championship, which they are one of the favourite teams for that competition. So, you got to balance it out. You try to communicate as much as possible, but you still cannot look inside the player where he is exactly, you know. And once he's on the field, he knows, okay, am I good for 90 minutes? Am I good for 70 minutes? Then the communication obviously continues to happen with the manager outside. But these games are really, really crucial for the national teams to understand where they're at 3 months prior to huge competition. I mean, look at the United States now. The first game in their window was not the one that they wanted to. You know, they looked so sharp. But then they beat suddenly 2-0 Mexico in the Nations League final. And now everything is okay. Everything is fine. Now we're going to go into the Copa America and they're very confident. So these games, even if it's only two games, for every nation are very crucial. For every manager of a national team are very crucial. You know, the share of national team games is 20% of the calendar, and for the club teams is 80% of the calendar. And obviously, we don't need to go too deep into the whole discussion, is the clubs, they maximize every single day out of the calendar, because you have, in case of England, you have the Premier League, you have the FA Cup, you have the League Cup, you have obviously the Champions League teams, your Europa League teams. So they are, basically we are absolutely on the limit of games for the players, absolutely on the limit. And the other 20% is the national team calendar, which already got reduced over the last years. You don't have any more August date was there when we were still playing national team, was an August date there. It's not existing anymore. You have only in the first part of this year, just this March window. So, but that March window was now crucial for so many national team managers and countries to understand better where they're at a couple of months prior to a huge competition, if it's the Copa America or if it's the European Championship.
To that point, though, Jurgen, like, England are struggling for centre-backs. John Stones is the number one centre-back, head and shoulders above everybody else. He could have picked up the ball and kicked it into his own net in these friendlies, and he's still going to Euros, he's still going to start. So the point is, if you're Gareth Southgate, what are you learning about John Stones from these two matches that you don't already know? And is it not best to rest him and to bring in others that you want to kind of experiment with or give a chance to see if they're worthy to go to the Euros? Because you already know that John Stones is starting for you.
Yeah, but you don't know who's the best matchup for John Stones in this moment, you know. And if you play two other ones, then John Stones is not part of that process. So he wants to be sure that he's going to play in the Euros as a starter, as the boss there, as a center back. And he wants to figure out, okay, who matches me the best? Look at Germany. They have now Rüdiger and Tah as the two center backs. And they suddenly performed so well that the whole country says now, well, these are the two starters. There's no doubt about it for the Euros, you know. And other ones, big names like Hummels and others, you know, they wonder now what's going on. We're just 3 months prior to the Euros and I'm not even a topic anymore for the German team. So in these two friendlies, for many, many nations, happened a lot of stuff. And that's why they are so valuable. And that's why, you know, still, I mean, obviously, if John Stones would be injured, leaving it at home, no doubt about it. But if he feels fine, if he feels ready for it, then he better goes there and proves his point.
Can I make a quick point here?
You can do whatever you want, Stephen.
How is the international manager supposed to decide who's more important than anybody else? Because there's 11 players on the field and there's 11 managers sitting at home thinking that I don't want him playing this game. Mm. So it's not just the fact that you don't play John Stones. All around the field, you've got managers who aren't maybe going for the title. Some might be involved in relegation. Some might be trying to get in the top four. There's all different reasons. So how does an international manager choose who he leaves out?
Yeah, how do you deal with that, Jurgen? Because you must have had phone calls from managers going, look, I don't want him playing. I want you to wrap him in cotton wool. And you're like, yeah, whatever. And then you start him. Like, how do those conversations go?
Well, you turn it around, as simple as that. You say, what if you were in my shoes, you know? If Nagelsmann loses these two friendlies against Holland and against France, you know what goes on? There's an earthquake in Germany, and he might not be the coach in the summer. You know, so you are on Saturday, Sunday, prior to your national team window, you there, and you hope that your players stay all healthy in the club teams. That you have them, especially your leaders in your team, and you hope that they're coming injury-free to the national team and can perform them for their country. So this has always been an issue between clubs and countries, and it's just normal. It's just organic in a certain way, and you have to accept it. So when a club coach asked me, can you just play him 1 hour? Then I said to him, well, if you play him 1 hour just on the weekend, let me see if you take him out, you know, after maybe you win 2-0 at halftime, you take him out and give him 45 minutes rest for the national team window. That's not going to happen. You know, so it's a very simple discussion between club and country coaches. And I was on the boat on both sides, and you just have to take it the way it is.
But if I was, I suppose, that domestic manager, Jürgen, I would say we're the ones paying his wages.
Yeah, but the wages they're paying them also, I'm not saying only, but also because they're national team players, also because they perform in World Cups and in European Championships and Copa Americas and all these intercontinental competitions, and they are so outstanding for their countries. You know, that is a big part of why they earn so much money. But I understand that fact. Obviously, you know, the money is paid by the club teams. But there is absolutely no problem with that. Players, obviously, you know, get a hit or get some issues in either games, if it's with the club or with the country. It's just normal.
Why do you hate the international game?
have you been here this week?
I hate the international game.
I think also the question for Gareth Southgate is, what is he trying to achieve from these two games? More so than what's he going to learn about Gareth Southgate? Now, given the fact that this is...
John Stones, excuse me.
Given the fact that this is an open transfer, international window, you feel that... The opponents in Brazil and Belgium were chosen for a reason, because he wanted to test his team against these opponents for some other reason. And maybe his thinking is, in those games just before the tournament, I'm going to have easier games where we could play with some confidence and some freedom. Maybe the players aren't as tested. So this is a real opportunity. No European Nations League or anything at stake. I can do as I please here. And that's what he's trying to learn from his team ahead of, again, we will see, easier friendlies before the tournament, if that's what he's decided to go. That's the question to ask of Gareth Southgate. What was he trying to learn from Brazil and Belgium specifically?
Well, I'll tell you what. This seems to be very specific to England and the Premier League. Mm. Because Gareth Southgate comes into...
And the top of the Premier League.
Yes, the top of the Premier League. Yeah. And because Gareth Southgate comes into this press conference, which happened right after the match, already knowing what Holland had done with Virgil van Dijk, what Norway had done with Erling Haaland and Martin Odegaard. So it's almost as if I have to preempt and prepare for this question that I know it's coming, because I'm going to have to defend myself.
Well, you know Stevie's saying?
What's that?
Fail to prepare, prepare to fail.
Well, there you go.
That's it.
Well, here's the thing. and I sit here in this show and I say it time and time again. The game, our game, does not begin and end with the English national team and with the Premier League. There's a whole world out there, a whole world out there that doesn't care whether John Stones is injured or not. Too bad. He went to the national team. He got injured. It happens. Deal with it.
OK, we will turn the page and we will focus on... Oh, no, the Premier League.
He hates the Premier League.
Oh, the Premier League. Gareth Southgate.
Ali, you can sit out this. Manchester City against Arsenal, of course, this weekend. What a game it should be on Sunday. Easy question, Jürgen. Who's going to win it?
Oh... I would go with Man City in this one.
Oh, you seem a little nonplussed like Ali about that.
Very calmly, very quietly with Man City.
There will be a lot more discussion about their game, of course, on ESPN FC to come, and De Clasico as well.
Hey! Super!
Just a reminder, ESPN FC with you throughout the week.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Somehow, every conversation that we've had with Jürgen, he's turned around to Germany winning two matches this week. So let's go into that in a little more detail, shall we? Of course, it was quite the debacle going into that tie against France. But things have very much changed with the victory against them. And obviously, against the Dutch yesterday, they are third favourites to go on and win it. Of course, it's on home soil, Jürgen. But how these two matches must change the narrative completely about this international side going into the Euros.
Yeah, and this is the extremes of football. This is the beauty of it. You know, a week ago, everybody had doubts. Everybody was negative. Everybody had no hope, really, you know, for Germany going to these Euros. And even by hosting it, you know, we were all nervous about how it will look like. And we discussed, of, oh, hopefully we're going to win the first game. And then you suddenly, in two friendlies, you beat France and you beat Holland, which are two big rivals, especially Holland. And things look very, very positive now. I mean, Julian Nagelsmann is now all safe, is all fine. And we found a couple of players, new players, that filled their roles in a tremendous positive way, like Maxi Mittelstädt, the left back, or Robert Andrich, a defensive midfielder, played the role. Obviously, Toni Kroos came back and gave it a lot more balance, the whole team. And then you have an attacking trio, basically, of Havertz, Musiala, and Wirtz, which is super exciting. So a lot happened in just a couple of days, just in two games. And this is obviously fun to watch now from a German perspective. And why not believing in being able to win this thing?
Well, indeed, that seems to be what everyone is saying ahead of the start of the tournament in the summer, Jürgen. We had a question on extra time, which I'm now going to ask you, which you're going to say, oh, don't ask me to choose, but I'm going to ask you to choose. If you could have one of these players on your side, uh-huh, would it be Florian Wirtz, uh-huh, or, oh, Jamal Musiala?
Well, I mean, obviously, Florian Wirtz is an extremely technical gifted, huge, huge talent that comes through the ranks there in Germany, through Leverkusen, and he will end up this year to win his first German title. You know, I was in Qatar at the World Cup where Germany showed a very, very negative face, not only going home after the group stage right away, but also off the field and not doing what it was supposed to do, representing their country the right way. Musiala was a victim of that. Musiala had his first World Cup and basically to play, and he was so full of energy. He was so eager to show the world that, you know, maybe I'm on the same kind of page with Jude Bellingham, you know, and maybe the new upcoming star in world football. But he didn't get the chance to really prove that point because Germany went home after three games. So I'm telling you, Musiala is a very special, very special kid. He can be really the difference maker this summer in the European Championship already, even if he's still very, very young, but for many, many years to go.
Musiala then over Wirtz. Same as you, Ali? Would you choose that?
Did he choose Musiala? Oh,
without a doubt. That was definitely Musiala.
Yes, I chose Musiala.
That's who you got from that?
Yeah.
Oh, OK.
Yeah.
I mean, it felt like Musiala. I'm going to say Musiala. And the reason I say Musiala is because I think that in tight spaces, he has this very special ability to create space for himself. So he's got people around him, and yet he's got that dip of the shoulder to create some separation to score goals. Early on in the season, concerns about injuries, concerns about productivity, but seems to be playing at a high level right now for Bayern Munich, and certainly what we saw from him in Champions League a couple of weeks ago and what we're seeing from him with Germany, and really what we're seeing with him or from him with Bayern Munich lately, is the best version of Jamal Musiala, a guy who can run with the ball, who can run without the ball, who can find a pass, the finishing has to become a little bit more consistent. If it does, then we're talking about a completely different level of player. Jamal Musiala is special.
Musiala, of course, featuring the Clásica this weekend, which will be live on ESPN. Jürgen, did I hear you're going to be with Seb for the Clásica?
What?
That is a booby prize.
Say that again, please, Dan.
Are you at a watch party with Seb?
Yeah, I will be in Atlanta this weekend at the watch party from the Bundesliga and ESPN.
I will definitely enjoy
this match.
Yes.
Yes. Super.
You and Sebastian Salazar.
He'll
have so many things to talk to you about. Be sure then to join us for our hour-long preview on Saturday. It kicks off at 12:30. Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. The big game in Germany this weekend. We discussed this yesterday when Didier Deschamps not really pulling any punches, talking about why he hasn't chosen William Saliba as his first choice centre-back going into these internationals. He's having a good season, but he also does things that I don't like so much. For France, he has limited game time, but when he plays, that hasn't necessarily gone well. The hierarchy doesn't favour him at the moment, but he is here. Upamecano has had game time and perhaps William has had less. With certain players, I make sure to preserve because it can
persevere.
My first day. Because it can be confidence or little blockages that can shift. Some don't have any concerns, so need game time. William has had less game time, so that doesn't allow him to be very calm. You're going to want to focus on the bits that I read properly when he says he does things I don't like so much. It seems strange to say something so publicly about a young player who hasn't had that much international experience yet.
Well, knowing Didier since a long time, I think that he probably had a talk with the player already about what he maybe doesn't like at the moment, what he wants to see differently. But this is a good example of these two friendly matches, you know, where they have the time to see things they need to see from a manager point of view. And I think when he doesn't comment like that, I'm sure that he already talked to the player about the facts.
Jürgen, what's it like when you've got that situation where Upamecano, of course, clearly is one of your first-choice defenders because he's what he's done in the past, yet, obviously, for Bayern, he's had a shocking season overall, and then you've got people cheering for Saliba, wanting him to come in to replace him. How much does that noise affect your decision?
The noise, I don't think it affects your decision. I don't think so. At the end of the day, he looks at the quality of the players, he looks how they match up, and then he goes with his own facts and obviously with his stomach feeling as well. He's not influenced by the outside. He watches the outside, obviously, as his press officer that tells him, you know, this and this is written in a paper or is said or is on TV. But it doesn't influence his decision.
Meanwhile, a lot more discussion what happened at international level and in particular for France on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. That will drop on Thursday. Be sure to check that out. Now, they've done a special with Ben Davies, and Gab eventually would ask him, what is the protocol for a new manager coming in?
In a corporate structure, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if my department, if we were to get a new boss, he would come and he would meet with all of us collectively and then meet with all of us individually and stuff. Is that what all your new managers have done? Have they said, all right, you know, do you, like, schedule a time and you go and you talk to him for 20 minutes, half an hour, individually, in addition to what you do? Is that seems pretty standard.
It seems standard, but that's not real. That's not what I've ever experienced in football.
Really?
I've never experienced a manager coming in and having one-to-ones with everyone. I told this to a couple of friends, and they were also surprised at that as well. But it's more a meeting as a collective, and really, it came down to watching us on the training pitch. That's probably the first real interaction you get. We had meetings as a team of what was expected, what behaviours were expected, how you can be successful in my system. But there are no real one-on-ones where you air your concerns or ask where you stand. I think that's something that the manager will look at and make his decision probably over time.
What's interesting, when Gav was asking that question, everyone here was shaking their head going, no, we would never do that. Jürgen, what's your protocol going and how do you deal with addressing a new squad?
Well, obviously, there's the collective talk with the entire team and about your expectations and about the way you work and how you want to go forward. But then I think it's very important that you meet one-on-one with players. You know, maybe not with everyone in the first week. That's a lot of meetings. That's a lot of... I mean, I love to meet the players over a cup of espresso. You know, that would probably keep me then awake for a couple of weeks. So, no, I think it is important, you know, to have one-on-one conversations. And here and there, you know, maybe you make a choice and you talk to four or five leader players of your team. You know, they think, you know, they're running the show in the locker room. They look after the younger ones. But I think it's obviously today far more important than maybe 20, 30 years ago is to have a good positive way of communicating with your players, that they understand where they're at, you know, what you expect from them, and also maybe here and there some advice how they can improve their own individual performance over time. And therefore, I think it's nowadays it's far more common that you have these one-on-ones than, as I said, 30 years ago.
Yeah. What we had was, that I can remember, is tribal council, essentially. Right. And it's a group that Jürgen is talking about. Four or five of what are perceived to be leaders of the team meet with those guys. After you met with the collective, then you go to tribal council. Now, see, this is what happens as well. If you're an original member of tribal council...
Now, people might not know, or maybe people don't watch Survivor.
Right, well, essentially, you're getting people around, sitting around the fire, voting as to who's... Oh, right, right, okay. You go to tribal council, and you're one of these members, one of these original members, right? And then all of a sudden, by the second or third week, you don't get a call back to the meeting.
Okay.
You know.
Right.
You now have gotten a clear message from the manager that perhaps, nah, you're not part of this group any longer. And I think players in the locker room know as well, like, who's running this locker room. And if you have been voted off,
right,
figuratively, if you've been voted off tribal council, now you've lost power in that locker room as well.
How are the one-on-one with you go, Shaq? You all right?
I'm still trying to figure out what tribal council is. Thanks. I had no idea. I had no idea what you were talking about, Fro.
The show is only 30 years old, that's all. Shaq.
Well, listen, back in our day, again, there would be no one-on-ones. Certainly, or there'd be very few with three or four of the more important
tribal
players.
Tribal council?
That word's banned now.
I don't know what that is. The best the majority could hope for is, you know, a passing conversation on the training park.
Right.
You know, you're walking off together and the manager walks beside you, you have a chat one-on-one for 30 seconds in full view of everybody else, but that's about as good as it got.
How did you deal with it, Stevie, when you were coaching?
I was thinking of one of the things that you do, but you actually don't mean at all. And I wouldn't have any tribal council either.
Right.
Because I think you're setting yourself up for what Ali's talking about.
Yes.
What was that? But this whole open door policy, I used to use it all the time as well.
But hoping that no one walked
through. Hoping that nobody came near at all. I completely discouraged it. But I would do most of it on the training field. Shaq is talking about, you know, just picking your moments, picking your times, whether it's on the training field, whether it's in an airport somewhere, just... You pick and choose your times to talk to people that will have an influence in the dressing room.
Right.
And not always the same one. You've got to involve a few. But, yeah, no one-on-ones, no thanks.
But you also need to know who are the players that you can talk to. You need to know who in this group really carries some weight and who's going to take in the information, who you can be negative with, who you have to be positive with, who you have to put your arm around his shoulder, who needs a kick in the backside, and... That's a dynamic that is difficult for a manager when you're just getting there because you're getting to know your players. And that's why I don't think they're one-on-ones because you don't really know who you're approaching and how to approach this specific person because you don't quite know his personality just yet. And it's a balancing act. You want to get your system out there. You want to get your style of play out there. And you don't have the time to be going, hey, I want you to do this, and I want you to do this, and I want you to do this. It's not, listen, you come in as a new manager on Wednesday and you're having to play on Saturday. So
there are a lot of things that you need to get through. Mm. The one-on-ones, that's what they don't happen.
What was interesting, Ange Postecoglou talking about his style of coaching, Jurgen, was that he doesn't want to get too close to players because he doesn't want personal feelings to affect professional decisions.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think the players, they are smart enough to read a manager and to see when he gets emotional, how he feels, you know, during the games, after the games, before the games. I mean, managers are also just human beings as well. You know, they're nervous, they're anxious, you know, they want to do well, you know, they want to do well for everybody. Another big role for a manager nowadays is certainly is not only the man management of your players, it's how you actually run an entire group of people that are around the players. So you have to handle, I would say, in a national team level, you're about 60, 70 people. 25 of them are players. The other ones are the medical staff, it's the media staff, it's the marketing staff, it's administrative staff. And there's so much going on, and you have to make sure that the energy from these people that are not on the field is positive, is good, is convincing, is confident. Because if you have there some naysayers, you know, some negative people bringing bad karma into your overall environment, you will end up in a mess. So the role of a manager today has changed dramatically. But I think that the players are really smart. They know what's going on, you know, inside also the coaching staff. They know what's going on a bit in the brain of a manager and what he wants, how he feels. And I wouldn't be worried if a player kind of would read me extremely well. And I wouldn't give anything away in that moment that at the end of the day would not be okay. I don't think that's a problem.
Can I say, as a player, I never took any decision a manager made personally. That's part of their job.
You still do it now, Shaq.
I've been dropped a lot. I've taken none of those decisions as personally. I understood that the manager has a job to do. He has to do the best of his ability, and he calls it as he sees it. And I never felt otherwise.
I can't imagine what it must be like, because having an outside staff of about almost 40 youngins in there, I'd hate that. I mean, when I was at the Revs, I purposely kept a small staff because it was easier for everybody to be in that position that Jurgen's talking about, how their energy has to be a certain way and how they have to be a certain way in front of the players and a certain way with us. So I like to have a small staff, whether it was the physios, the masseurs or the press. You know, there was probably about 10 of us and we were real tight and we would be together socially as well. I cannot imagine having to deal with 30-odd people and have them all try to go in the same direction. Because the more people you got, the more mouths you've got, the more people try and think on their own, think they should be doing something they shouldn't be doing, and it makes it so much harder to be on top of it. I can't imagine that many people.
We'll say thank you very much to Jurgen. Enjoy the Clásico. Enjoy Atlanta and the watch party. That game, of course, live on ESPN on the weekend. Just a reminder, though, that Ben Davies interview in its entirety will drop on Friday in that special edition of Gab and Jules.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Some news and notes. Olivier Giroud is set to join LAFC in July, making that move from Milan. Disappointing, frustrating news meanwhile for Midge Purse. She's out for the Olympics and the whole season because of a torn ACL. Meanwhile, Sophia Smith has signed a new contract extension with Portland Thorns until 2025. She will be the highest paid player in NWSL. If you go back in the archives, of course, Seb spoke to her on Football Americas a couple of weeks ago. You can check that out. Meanwhile, the latest edition will drop tomorrow. La Liga returns this weekend, then Barca take on Las Palmas on Saturday, Real Madrid against Athletic Club on Sunday. Very much the highlights, those games, all live on ESPN+. Meanwhile, very much the business end of the Championship. Good Friday, of course, meaning we've got live action for you. Bristol City take on Leicester City, Norwich City against Plymouth Argyle, Blackburn Rovers take on Ipswich, another big game at the top of the table, Leeds away against Watford. Great day of action right across the board, live on ESPN+. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for being with us. Be sure, though, to stay tuned, as Extra Time will be next, where the gentleman will address some of your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Very much quantity over quality today. Ali's in, Shaka, Stevie in the studio. International week is over. We're starting to focus on domestic weekend. Meanwhile, big news coming out of Los Angeles. Olivier Giroud will be joining LAFC from Milan. The first question is asking what your thoughts on this, Ali.
I suppose LAFC have gone down this path. They started with Hugo Lloris coming.
Yes.
Imagine that you're going to get goals from Olivier Giroud. I didn't really think that Luis Suarez was going to be a hit in Major League Soccer because, honestly, in watching Luis Suarez move over the last couple of seasons, and I'm using the term move very loosely, it didn't really fill me with a whole lot of confidence. But what we have seen is that if you have Messi playing behind you, he's going to find you with the ball and you're going to be able to score goals. Well, they're going to have to find somebody in LAFC that is able to provide Olivier Giroud with service. And if they do, he's going to score goals for them.
I'm not sure if any of you can address this, but I'll ask it. Maybe you, Stevie, when you didn't play for Scotland. When you aren't called up for your country, what's training like during the international break?
Oh, fantastic.
It's just mess around, is it?
Aye.
Like when the teacher goes away on a school trip?
Yeah. Go and train with the kids or
right.
The resis, nothing too serious.
Yep.
Have a day off.
Nice.
Chill out. Nice, calm, cool week. Fantastic. Up until Thursday.
Oh, you hated it?
I hated it. I'm just doing nothing.
Stevie's just set it up beautifully.
Yeah, but I hated it. I hated it.
Just because you're professional. You want to be
all day, every day, Dan. All day, every day.
I thought you'd be all about the chill out part.
No, never a rest day in my world.
Oh, man.
Wow, and now we're lying. Straight lying in the show.
Guys, who were your biggest rivals when you played for your national team? Did the opponent's fans throw things at your team? Oh, no, this is going down a bad road. And do other crazy antics during heated matches? Right, we start off with bags of urine.
Yes.
That was common.
Yeah.
That wasn't with our most heated rivals.
By the way, what? Isn't it urine?
Urine. Right, this is a discussion we don't need to have.
This is vice versa all over again.
Wee wee.
No, that's Pinkle. Urine.
From a Trinidad Tobago perspective, probably our biggest rivals were Jamaica, as the other big nation in Sydney within the Caribbean. But nobody in Jamaica is throwing bags of urine or urine at you.
Wow, okay.
No, they're not.
Right.
You know, it's just, I've often described the Trinidad Tobago-Jamaica rivalry as a sibling rivalry. And that's where it was, and it didn't spill out into anything. For want of a better phrase, and anything more.
Who are your biggest rival for Venezuela?
Colombia.
Right.
Obviously, because we share a border, and you know, we also share a border with Brazil, but let's just say that the difference between Brazil and us is quite make it for a rivalry.
Yes.
Not the case with Colombia. Games with Colombia are usually packed with.
Did you have things thrown at you?
I don't remember in particular against Colombia.
the times that I received the bags of urine was in CONCACAF Champions League in a game in Costa Rica, actually.
Oh, beautiful.
That's where I got it most. Costa Rica, as it happens. I'm noticing a trend here.
But I will tell you, we went to Uruguay and beat Uruguay 3-0 there. And my father and my brother happened to be in the stands.
Nice.
And so, but they shepherd...
What did they throw at you?
They shepherd sort of the Venezuelan fans and then put them into a bus, trying to protect them from the Uruguay fans. And, and the bus driver was begging, pleading with the fans from Venezuela. Like, look, listen, I know you guys are going to celebrate, but please, don't do it now.
Sure.
Do it when you get to the hotel.
Yes.
In a controlled
environment. Don't provoke.
Don't do it now, because if you start yelling out of this bus, they will stop us and they will burn my bus. And this is how I make a living.
Oh.
So the guy was essentially begging.
Yeah.
And so, well, the Venezuelan fans were well behaved until they got to the hotel.
Good. Yeah. The bus survived.
The bus survived, as far as we know.
No, not a lot. I mean, obviously England, but...
Yeah.
But as far as throwing stuff and all that, no.
Did you play against England much?
I'm trying to think. Once at Wembley.
Oh, here we go.
Once at Wembley and then a couple of times in under-21s.
By the way...
Twice at Wembley, sorry. Once on a Wednesday and once on a Saturday.
And by the way, you went as a fan as well, yes?
I did,
Which is one of my favourite chapters in Stevie's book. We can't really talk about it because it's not quite...
You went to where?
Family material. So he went to go and watch Scotland against England.
Oh, OK. That's
and things happened.
Okay. Things happened.
Brilliant. Well, not really. Interesting things happened.
Was Stevie throwing anything?
There were no...
No backs?
No backs?
No backs?
You said. Pretty sure that's not how you said it.
There's one way to find out.
Yes. Buy the book.
All right.
It's available.
I can't find it anywhere. It's sold out.
A new run coming.
Yeah.
Steve, who are the underrated British Irish players of the 70s and the 80s? Oh, you love this question as well, Ali. Players that would tear it up in the Premier League nowadays. I'd suggest prime Alan Ball would be immense in the modern game. Who was taller, me or Alan Ball?
Alan Ball was 5'6".
Yes, I'm 5'8". Take that, Alan Ball.
We're not.
My driver's licence.
No, you're not. Yes. 5'8" with your heels on.
Tippy toes.
I'll tell you what, he was small, but he was tenacious. And he was a great player.
Just like you.
I mean,
nobody's ever said that about you.
Small and tenacious.
Get ready, me and Bally.
I think the height's about the only comparison.
They're quite a high voice, didn't he, as well?
As well.
He was famous for three things. Right. He was famous for winning the World Cup 1966 with England.
That's quite a claim.
He was famous for his high voice.
Yes.
He used to talk like that.
Yep, he did.
And he was famous for wearing white boots.
Well, when it was...
Classic.
Oh, wow.
I mean, nobody wore white boots.
No.
Right. Except him.
Who would you like to throw into this conversation apart from Alan Ball?
Oh, Mariner.
Mariner.
I wish Paul was here because Paul played under him at Portsmouth.
Yes.
And... I'm sure you've all seen the film The Dirty Dozen. Well, this team that Ball put together was like The Dirty Dozen.
Right.
Just vagabonds, thieves, thugs.
Right.
I mean, just...
Rest in peace, Paul Mariner.
We love you, Paul!
Honestly, a horrible bunch. And Mariner was one of the sensible ones at it.
Wow.
But they used to... Whenever they played away from home, all the players used to wait on Alan Ball. Once they all got on the bus, to get ready to drive home, and the driver would shut the door, and the manager would lean over to the bus driver and go, "Driver, first available." And they would all start cheering and everything. And what first available was the first liquor store. as soon as the last one got on the bus and the door shut, he would just lean over and go, "Driver, first available, thank you."
Yes, beautiful.
And they all go, "Yay!"
There we go.
Remember the single tier? By Shaka.
Oh, dear. Emotional times. Oh, what an eclectic mix this exercise be. How rough is it to come back from international duty, Ali, especially if you had a long round trip, to get back in the proper mindset with your club team?
I'd say for me it was one of the biggest challenges, and particularly if you're playing some of these do-or-die games and Commonwealth qualifiers, and you know, you just got done beating Argentina, which we did at one point, or you big game against Colombia, a big game against Brazil, or whatever the case may be, and you are on this high, right? You get on that flight, and traveling from South America to meet my team in MLS wasn't always the smoothest ride, because we would have to go back to Venezuela and then catch a flight and so on and so forth. Eventually, I would get there, and you're tired, you're physically tired, but you're mentally drained. But nobody cares.
No.
When you get to your team, it's Friday, you're playing on Saturday, and the coach is having a conversation with you. Say, how you feeling? How you doing? You doing okay? You feel good? You feeling? And what are you gonna say?
Yeah.
I mean, you say, yeah, you know, I'm all right. But you're not gonna say, no, look, I'm dead. I can't play.
Right.
You want to play?
Sure.
This is what we do. And but it was always difficult. The physical part was difficult, but the mental part of turning the page on what you just did or didn't do, for that matter, whether it's elation or frustration, and then being able to focus on your job on the weekend.
What about you, Shaq? You had long haul jobs.
I was all right, Dan.
Yeah.
You know me, Dan. I'm switched on all day, every day.
Really?
We're definitely lying.
Game to game, Dan. Didn't really matter.
What's happened to you? Your new fancy ties got you all excited.
Tell you what.
Look at this.
Gold, baby.
I know, gold. Steve, while you were playing, would your teammates have imagined you being a manager someday?
No.
No.
Would you have
imagined? Wait for the rest of the question.
Hey, I couldn't imagine I was going to be a manager.
Is it something that you thought about doing during those days, or you just fall into it?
Well, nothing else. I couldn't do anything else.
Right. And you need money.
And I needed dough.
Yeah.
So I don't have a choice. No, it just so happened that I actually enjoyed it.
Good.
So, yeah, no. They certainly would say no. And if you'd asked me when I was younger, I would have said no. But
here you are.
Here you are.
Living testament. Dreams do come true.
Dreams do come true.
But, and if I may say, if we can get serious for a second, Stevie was one of the best managers in MLS, if not the best manager.
There were only eight teams, though, weren't there?
Well, then there were 10, and then there were 14, whatever the case. He was one of the best, if not the best, because players talk.
Yeah.
And Stevie was always held in high regard by his players, which is, I suppose, is the best reflection that you can have as a manager, that your players speak highly of you. Even those that you got rid of still spoke highly of Stevie. So I would have loved to have played for Stevie.
Why didn't you sign him?
Dive
never did
much.
Any money. Couldn't afford them.
Thank you, Stevie.
last one. This has got to be for you, because these two won't know. It's opening day tomorrow for MLB.
Yeah.
Any predictions on who will win the World Series? And would anyone like to place a wager?
Red Sox will win it. What are you talking about?
What does that mean? Red Sox will win. Why can't come to me and Steve?
Hey, just because you know nothing about it doesn't mean that we don't.
So who's playing for the Red Sox these days?
Players.
Nomar Garcia Parra.
Big Papi.
Omar. Big Papi.
Big Papi.
I believe you should have improved my point.
Hey, you need a big game, give the ball to Pedro Martinez.
Yeah. Tom
big,
Brady.
Big Peter. Big
Peter. By the Atlanta Braves. They always seem to threaten but come up short.
Oh.
Maybe the Atlanta Braves are the ones, Texas Rangers defending champions. But the story right now in Major League Baseball is actually not necessarily the start of the season, but what's going on with superstar Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, that took speaking of wages.
Uh-huh. Mm. So he's been accused of or placing bets, or betting on the game, gambling on the game. And what has happened, apparently, is that now we're blaming the interpreter.
Well, there you go.
Now we're blaming the interpreter, and we're saying, and hang on to this, Shaq, you're going to enjoy this. $4.5 million went missing from his account, and he didn't know the interpreter had actually taken that money.
Oh.
Now, I bought plane tickets for my parents to come and visit in a couple of weeks.
Oh, nice.
Pay $700, right? Okay. I got a message from my bank saying, hey, is this really you? To verify. $700.
Okay.
When $4.5 million go missing, somebody has got to be able to send a message.
These are the views of Ali Moreno and not those of the collective ESPN FC group.
Are you telling me he's gone, go and get us a BLT and he's put bets on? I mean, what are you talking about? He was lost in translation. Come get me a sandwich.
But I don't know. But no, the interpreter is the one being blamed. I don't know how that happened.
That's Ali Moreno.
I'm just curious. How do $4.5 million disappear? We got to go there.
Some of us will be back tomorrow.
Music.
Hey.
Yeah, play the music.
I'm getting
the music.
I'm getting
the haircut.
Come on.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was. It's not looking as... puffed out as yesterday.
Fluffy yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday it was looking
good. Normal gel,
very fluffy.
All right.
Ah, dear. Right.
Okay.
Who wants to see Ali?
What did I say? I'm just asking a question.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.